you know, I think as fiction writers, our job is to have interesting people doing interesting things in interesting places. And it doesn't have to be a place you've been. It doesn't have to be a real place. It just has to be interesting on some level. But the part you know is the human side. Like, what are these characters experiencing? Chris Gudgeon, Still Life with Birds and Dust. A massive storm is hitting the eastern seaboard, a black cloud of dust extending some 400 miles and carrying with it an estimated 650 million tons of debris. Some parts of Chicago and Boston have seen up to 9 inches of dust accumulate overnight, while the death toll in New York City exceeds 1,200, mostly the elderly, the poor, or the homeless. The mayor has closed all ports and is declaring an official state of emergency. The West Coast, while not hit as hard, is experiencing black snow as an Arctic cold front moves in from the north and mixes with the falling dust. Frozen crystals, the color of dirty latte, have been coming down since lunchtime, disrupting Michael and Andrew's wedding preparations and, by bringing the city's already compromised transport system to a standstill, causing them to consider postponing the ceremony altogether. Let me ask you something, Andrew. Are you getting married because you are in love with me and want to share the rest of your life with me? Or because you're in love with me and feel the need to make a political statement? That's a hell of a question to ask someone, Michael. They stand in front of the vacant lot between a Fuddruckers hamburger franchise and a Texaco service station, a steel tang to the air, watching two seagulls battle a crow over a strip of plastic wrap. They're curious-looking gulls, smaller than normal, with round black heads. Michael, who has helped his children through a bird phase, correctly identifies them as Bonaparte's gulls. One gull is holding the plastic in its beak as the other one stands close, assuming a defensive posture, wings unfurled in sharp pointed V's, head back, cawing staccato threats at the wary crow. The crow is pecking now and then, stabbing at the precious garbage. Michael notices that the crow has a deformed foot, the talons curled in a permanent fist. He wavers one moment, rooting for the ambitious crow, the next for the persistent, valiant gulls. Fact, Bonaparte's gull is named not after the famous emperor, but his nephew, Charles Lucien Jules Laurent Bonaparte. Andrew is holding his arm, wipes away the dust that is accumulating on Michael's shoulders. He's almost 57, Michael, although the official biography on the university website shaves off 5 years. One of the most celebrated ornithologists of his day, Charles Bonaparte's achievements include the discovery of two bird species, the mustached warbler and the Wilson storm petrel, the description and classification of more than 100 more species, and the creation of the genus Zenaidea, named in honor of his wife and first cousin, Zenaide Letitia Julie Bonaparte. Michael watches. The crow gives up and flies off, slow, sulky wing strokes. The bird passes quite close to them and lands on top of the temporary fence. It perches for a moment and then lets out a string of accusatory caws. You are a veritable fountain of information, Dr. Weiss. I am trying to stay relevant. Dry soil is piled up across the lot, and each mound is covered by a blue tarp held in place with cinder blocks. Michael is tall and thin and still wears a suit and tie when he gives a lecture, a practice his colleagues abandoned long ago. He tries to remember the building that stood on the spot years before. The Chinese public school, he thinks, with its multi-tiered overhanging gable roof, squeaking curves and upturned eaves. They're putting up a Target superstore, Andrew says, wiping at the thin layer of dust coating his goggles. Andrew is 31, and perhaps because he's a little stocky, or because of his thin beard and serious spectacles, or because of his penchant for cardigan sweaters, he is often mistaken for a much older man. Michael nods. He's never been to a Target, and although he is not much of a shopper and has a generalized, irrational opposition to big-box stores, he feels a sense of anticipation that borders on excitement at the idea of having a Target superstore this close to his home. He feels Andrew's arm around his shoulder. What should we do today, Professor? I thought we'd get married, Andrew. And then? And then our life will begin. There's a lot of unusual weather patterns, or unusual weather things that I talk about in the story, and they're based to a certain degree on what happened in the Dirty 30s, and I just thought I'd contemporize it without really identifying the time or place, because I thought that was important. Big news at the time, it was all in all the news, was same-sex marriage was sweeping America for some reason. I think I was picking up on a kind of apocalyptic sentiment around that was attached to people getting married, which seems strange. It should be the last thing that you think about when people get married, the great apocalypse, but that's what was on the mind of the general population, I think. So trying to tell stories that generally seem to be set in a place that's somewhere between reality and imagination.